When life gets harder, you get smarter. You don't mission, you level up like a boss. Connect Vox Fibre to your home, starting from 554 Rand per month. Level up your experience with Airtime's Wi-Fi boosters, Vobi voice app calling, Office 365, and over 160 other products to enhance your lifestyle. Live smart. Level up with Vox. Visit vox.co.za to view our range. T's and C's apply.
So Rechot, you see all this grey hair growing here.
That's
the software over the last 2 weeks that we've been trying to fix to get to work with this little podcast. What a mission. What an absolute mission.
How is it that we get it right on the test and then it
comes out when we try and do it live?
I don't understand.
So I actually hope it is going out live now. In fact, I'm going to mail myself a copy of this link so that we can just check before we officially start this podcast today.
Good idea.
Have a look on my phone. But before we get going, while I'm doing this, what is that IPA you're drinking there?
So yeah, this is quite interesting. It's again the tiny keg cans, but this is the Pina Colada IPA. It's like a collab brew between Stellenbosch. Well, it's Stellenbosch Breweries beer.
Mm-hmm.
It's very nice. It's very interesting. There's quite a bit of kind of a coconutty flavor. Sorry, it's a collab with Fierce Brewing Company. And studies. It's
a very colorful can.
Oh, it's a beautiful can. Yeah, mm. It's kind of, I mean, there you can see what it looks like. It's like a little hazy. It's a pale ale. Oh, it's like it's an IPA, but it's not very kind of hoppy. It's got a bit of, it's definitely got a bit of that coconut flavoring to it. I'm not sure what they used for the flavoring, actually, or if it was just flavor of actual coconut and vanilla and pineapple. Oh, that makes sense. So it's got this tropical fruitiness going. That's quite unique for an IPA. I mean, most IPAs have like a fruitiness, but it's not anything like this type of fruitiness. You know, this is proper tropical island fruit. So it's nice and flavorful.
Looks lovely.
It's good. I mean, it's not as good as the first one. I mean, I've had this one probably for a few weeks now. I don't know if it's changed a bit, but I mean, the first few I had were much better. Maybe just a batch thing. It looks completely blue on my screen, by the way. So I can't see the yellow.
Yeah, that's another issue we're having with Wirecast. It's the screen. We're doing screen sharing here, and it's for some bizarre reason it's coming through. It's kind of a purpley blue on Rechot's side. But I've just checked, and we are live on the intertubes, and it does seem to be working, and the audio seems to be coming through fine. So welcome to the podcast. Given the issues we're having, I don't think we're going to tweet this one out today.
Let's just do it. Let's just.
But it is going out there. So, in fact, let me keep the video window open because if we've got any questions in the chat room, please join us there. Where are my show notes? We're very disorganized today. The reason we didn't have a show last week was because of these troubles we've been having with Wirecast, but also because I have a new mixing desk here, which is my pick this week, so I'll talk about it a bit later in the show. But it's very cool. It allows you to do stuff like this. When Rechot says something very interesting, I'll hit this button. And it does some pretty cool stuff. So. Can you hear that, by the way, Rechot?
We're the booze. Yeah, I can hear it. We should have for winner and loser of the week, we should have those booze and cheers.
Yes. I don't think we've got booze here, but we've got things like this.
Oh, that's so magical, Duncan.
I can't see us using that, but it also does this. And this.
Dramatic.
And it does this.
That could be the loser jingle.
Loser of the week. Bottom right button. I don't know why I can't stop the laughing now. Stop. There we go. That's this too.
Everything for a one-man band. Yeah, let's not overuse those, please. Any of those, actually.
Crickets.
After I say something profound, you can have that play.
Oh, I don't know how to stop these damn things. They seem to be in a loop. There we go. But we'll get to this mixing board because although it took a lot of PT to get this thing to work, which I don't think is what they were intending in designing this product, it is now working and doing some pretty cool stuff. So So I must just remember when we get to Loser, I need to do that.
Yes.
So I've poured myself another Southern Comfort. Still working my way slowly through that bottle.
What, today or just in general?
No, just in general. In fact, it's the first time I've had any since the last time we podcast 2 weeks ago. Let's now that we know everything's working hunky-dory, shall we get this show on the road? I'm Duncan MacLeod.
And I'm Richard van den Berg.
This is Talk Central, episode 265 for the week starting 7 July 2019.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central. Join our YouTube live stream on Sundays from about 1 p.m. and please hit that subscribe button.
And on Talk Central this week, Econet Media's woes, rather.
Also on the show this week, Google and Facebook are bringing more subsea fiber to Africa. Ramaphosa backs Huawei and Bill Gates laments losing to Android.
It's Sunday afternoon. We are indeed live streaming on YouTube after a great amount of effort, and it's time to talk everything technology. Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
Geez, Duncan, how's it? I haven't seen you for a while, eh?
No, it has been a while. Actually, no, we saw each other plenty last Sunday. We just didn't go live on air. How long were we fiddling? Must have been at least an hour and a half.
Yeah, that's quite a while.
Yeah, and I'm still not quite sure what in Wirecast we've done to get this to work. There are so many settings in the software and just pressing buttons, and eventually the live stream is working, and it does seem to be going out at 1080p, and it does seem the audio quality does sound pretty amazing. And I have a new microphone here, by the way. It's the Rode Procaster.
Fancy. You've
got which Rode have you got on your side?
The NT2.
NT2, okay.
It's a vocal, it's more of a vocal, older vocal style microphone.
So we've both got, we've both got very good, can I lift this, and it's on a boom arm, so I can probably do that. We've both got great microphones now, so the audio version of this podcast should be sounding amazing, and it's recording directly onto this mixing desk's SD card. Nice. So won't be stripping the audio out of YouTube as we've been doing over the last month and a half. But good stuff. New technology, lots to learn, and lots to break, it seems. But shall we do our quiz? Do you want to do the first question, Richard?
Certainly. Google plans to build a new subsea cable from Europe to South Africa, while Facebook plans to encircle the content with a similar system. What are the two systems called?
And which social media company said last week it might slap warning labels on posts from politicians?
Good move, I think. NASA has announced plans to send spacecraft to which moon in the solar system?
And Apple has announced it's moving production of the Mac Pro, that's that very, very expensive cheese grater, from where to where?
And the final question, who announced last week that he's leaving Apple?
That's our quiz. As always, we'll get to the answers at the end of the show. But let's dive into this week's news, and there was quite a lot to talk about. In fact, quite a bit from last week when we didn't record as well, so I've left a few of those items on our show notes this week. But the big news this week was undoubtedly the news that the troubles at Econet Media, which is a sister company to Liquid Telecom and part of the Econet Group, founded by the Zimbabwean businessman, billionaire Strive Masiyiwa. Now, Richard, do you remember, I don't know if you ever played with one of their Roku boxes that they launched back in 2017.
I didn't, but I saw yours in action there. I remember having a conversation around it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's a Roku box, right? I mean, the hardware is quite good.
Yeah, it's great hardware. And so they launched this in partnership with Roku, and it stopped working earlier this week. And Business Day reported, I think it was on Tuesday, that Econet had put its pay TV business into administration. It seemed that the two events were linked because the Roku box, and I haven't looked at mine just in the last day or two, but it was popping up a message saying that the service has been suspended. And it was obvious to draw the conclusion that that Econet and Roku, or Econet probably wasn't paying Roku, and that Roku therefore discontinued the service. I spoke to Joseph Wundo, who's the CEO of Econet Media, and he denied that there's any link between the two. The administration, which he said was purely to do with Econet's pay TV assets. I've seen a report from the from the administrator that they've appointed, which is Ernst & Young, suggesting that it's the Econet Media business as a whole that's been placed into administration. So that's not entirely clear at this stage. So the CEO is saying that it's only the pay TV assets and not other aspects of the business, and not including the Roku streaming stuff, which he hopes will be online soon. They were actually talking about it going back online this week, but it hasn't yet. And then the pay TV business, under the Quesse brand, which they launched in several African markets, not including South Africa, because they didn't have a pay TV license here. But it's not clear to me whether the problems are more broad than they are letting on, because the document I've seen suggested that the whole of Econet Media had been placed into administration. It also raises interesting questions around Quesse Free TV, which you'll remember was the license that was granted to a company. The company is called Quesse Free TV, in which Econet Media is a 20% shareholder, and they were given a license by ICASA back in March to launch a free-to-air television platform in South Africa, and the first such license to be awarded since ETV got its license back, I think, in 1998 or so. So in about 20, first license in free-to-air television in about 20 years. Now, they're a minority shareholder. They've just got 20% of the equity. But they were planning to bring a lot of the content to the platform. Other shareholders include a business, I think it's called Meshack Capital, Mosong Capital, and a Royal Bafokeng Holdings subsidiary called Metix, Royal Bafokeng Metix, if I remember correctly. Now that they're just a 20% shareholder in this business, so one assumes that this business can actually still go ahead and launch free-to-air services. They've been given until March 2020, rather, to launch those services. But I know that they were planning to bring an HD sports offering to market sooner than that. They've got until 2021, not 2020, correction, to launch. And they were planning to bring a Quesse Sports in HD to the platform. But if Econet Media, in the entire tier of Econet Media, is now in administration, one wonders whether they're going to be able to do that. That is not clear. So they're kind of putting on a brave face and saying that this business isn't affected and that Quesse Free TV is moving ahead. But I think there are question marks about it, which we'll only see in due course. I did ask ICASA for comment on this, but they didn't respond to a request for comment. Obviously, it might reflect badly on ICASA if they've licensed an operator that isn't going to be able to launch because of financial difficulties. As far as I know, the Quesse Free TV offering, which is the Quesse Play offering, which is their streaming offering through the Roku box, is still not working. I will check it again this evening when I'm in front of my TV. But, disappointing, because a lot of consumers have bought this box through retail. Mm-hmm. And I think there are a lot of consumers who are relying on this and are a bit concerned that they are not able to use the platform.
Yeah, I've seen some tweets online where people want to take their boxes back that they recently bought and they couldn't do so.
Yeah. In fact, I had a call. No problem. I had a call from a retailer this week, I forget which one, from a salesman asking what's happened to them, because there was a consumer next to him in the store saying, my Quesse box is not working. Should I be selling these things to consumers? I said to him, I really don't know. I mean, I don't know if this is going to be coming back online, but they say that it's that it's unrelated to the administration, but I guess
still, for something to happen like that, it's crazy coincidence if it isn't related.
Yeah,
but how is it not? I mean, for such a service to be switched off, I'm sure Roku wouldn't take it lightly to disconnect.
No,
a lot of boxes, a lot of consumer boxes, because it's also a bad reflection on them if it is handled incorrectly.
So it must be a payment issue to Roku. I can't see it being anything else.
Yeah, no, obviously, I mean, we know what happens behind closed doors of conversations or what you want and want not to let out. I mean,
yeah.
And in between all those conversations, it's difficult to find the truth early on when things like this happen.
Well, I suppose if it's not back online by next week, I think the chances of it coming back are probably quite slim. That's actually a picture you can see on your screen now of the box. They had a partnership with Netflix as well, so you could pay in rands when this launched. Netflix was only available in dollars. You could only pay in dollars back in 2017 when this box launched. Mm. They have subsequently launched rand pricing, but they have a partnership with Netflix as well, and Netflix is on the box. And they had a whole bunch of channels on there and different types of content. It was quite good for what it was.
But it's strange that it's completely disabled now. So, I mean, you can't even make use of, because I remember I had a Roku box many, many years ago. That's not related to the Quest deal or anything. Mm. But, I mean, there were services on there that you could make use of. So this doesn't even revert to that. It's just disabled completely. So you can't use anything.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a custom box, I think, that Roku built for Quest. So, and I think it appears that Roku had full control over that box. And if they wanted to switch it off, they could.
Which makes an interesting question. Makes an interesting question as well around the, you know, negotiation for this type of thing. Do you really leave all of your IP in the hands of the manufacturer like that?
Mm. Yeah,
it means payment in perpetuity. If you know, because it means that, you know, they don't have the IP. Maybe they got a cheaper deal, and Roku said, "Okay, cool. We retain the IP. We'll give you the box.
Yes,
and you can launch for cheaper," which is probably what happened.
Yes,
but still, it shows us again. You know, if you don't own your own stuff. Yeah, you can land up in a, kind of some difficult times. Come time to pay, I guess.
Yeah, Johan says in the comments room, the comments in chat room, word of mouth still strong. Once your friends don't recommend things, difficult to fix it. That's a very good point. And the moment you have a problem like this, you go off for just a few days, and people don't really know what's going on, and there's talk of administration of the holding company. Word does spread very quickly, and people stop spending just like that.
Yeah. And more people then go back to Showmax and Netflix, and another competitor bites the dust. And again, when a new one pops up, people are less likely to jump on board because, you know, what happened with the last one, you know?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Good place to be.
So if anyone's listening to the show, either live today or post the fact, send us a message in the chat room if you're watching live, or send us a WhatsApp on 071-999-1111. That's 071-999-1111. If you bought one of these Quest Air Roku boxes, how do you feel about the fact that it's unavailable? Are you annoyed? Are you going to return this box? I'd like to know. I'd be annoyed if I'd bought one. I mean, I've got a freebie from the launch, but if I'd actually paid good money for it.
Well, imagine you're an actual customer and this is what you were using to watch content. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people like that. Although having said that, I don't know how big their business was. I don't really know anybody who uses as their main content box. I mean, a lot of people either have Apple TVs or some kind of Android based device, or just a PC connected to their TV, or obviously DStv MultiChoice.
I think if you're a tech savvy user, you wouldn't get one of these. I think you'd get this. I mean, if you're a tech savvy user, you're very likely to connect a computer to your TV, because then you've got the full power of the browser and you can access all the services you want through a web browser. I think a lot of the market has also gone for the Apple TV device. But I'm sure there must have been hundreds, if not thousands, of people who bought this through retail.
Yeah, I mean, they seem to have done well. There was a massive launch. But still, I mean, I don't know anybody who spoke about it really, and even in consumer terms.
Yes.
So, but they didn't put their numbers out, right? So we don't actually know how many people bought and subscribed.
No, we don't. We don't. We just know from the Ernst & Young document that I've seen, which they sent out to their creditors who haven't paid, that they got into a huge amount of debt to the tune of about the equivalent of 1.8 billion rand. I think it was $130 million of debt to external parties. So... you know, if you're a size of a MultiChoice, that amount of money probably isn't an issue. But if you're a smaller player like Econet Media, it sounds like they just spent too much money on content and didn't get the customers, to be frank.
Well, exactly. So they didn't have enough people to sign up to the service to justify all the money they were spending.
Yeah.
It's very sad. And they obviously had good content as a result of it. Well, I hope they did. I mean, it would have been sad if they had good content and they still failed.
Yeah, I don't remember what sort of content they had on there. I must say, I haven't looked at it in at least a year. I haven't switched that box on prior to this week to see the error message. But it's, they had Netflix. I think that was their main selling point. But there was some other stuff on there that wasn't bad. And you could add your own as well, and they promised to add more and more as time went on. I'm interested. I'm gonna go and test it again a bit later and see if it's working. But I have my doubts. Martin, how's it, Martin? From Sydney, Australia. G'day, mate. He says, Chromecast big down here under. Most free-to-air channels have mobile applications, and you can cast to TV. My TV has Google Chromecast built in, so no device needed. Yeah, I think Chromecast and Apple TV are really going to be the two big.
And smart TVs with built-in functionality. I mean, that's going to kill this market in any case, especially if those have an Android-based system or kind of an open app system where you can install, you know, any of these apps like Netflix and Showmax and those things.
Yeah. So that's Econet. I'm sure that story's going to run. The creditors meeting's happening next Wednesday online, Skype call. So I'm going to be naughty and dial into that. Even though I'm not a creditor of the companies, I'm going to dial in anyway and see what they have to say. Right, so shall we move on? What's next on our list? Google and Facebook are building undersea cables. Well, we know Google is because they've announced it. They're building something called the Equiano cable, which is going to run from Portugal to Cape Town. It's going to be 20 times the initial design capacity of the current largest system along that route, which I think is the WAX system at 5 odd terabits per second. Sure. So that would mean that this is a 100 terabit per second cable that's going to come down the coast. And this is before they apply additional dense wave division multiplexing technologies to it down the line. You know that the capacity of undersea cables keeps getting upgraded as the technology gets enhanced, as the DWDM wavelength splitting. I'm not exactly sure how it works, but it's the way that they compress and send information down a fiber optic cable.
For more data, that's all we want, right?
So you would have heard of 40G, 100G, 400G. Mm. These are types of dense wave division multiplexing technologies that are used to just cram this data down an undersea cable. And so the initial design capacity, and I presume this is going to be either a 100 or a 400G cable system, and it's going to be ready for service, I think they said by the end of 2021, so just over 2 years from now. 100 terabits a second. There's so much capacity, we're just going to be drowning in it, right?
Yeah, that's also not keeping in mind that so many other services are going to be using the data and the bandwidth through those pipes. Along with decommissioning of others, so yes, we'll definitely see more. And I must be honest, I'm not as excited about this one because I've got some pretty good fiber at home. So it's like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
It's future proofing now. Now it's like forward thinking, and in 5 years' time, you know, I still want to maintain my level of bandwidth and throughput at a lesser price, you know, cheaper price.
What's interesting, this is not a consortium cable and there are no multiple investors. It is purely being being built and funded by Google itself. And Steve Song, who I think many listeners to this show know, who developed the African Undersea Cables map, which he's basically recently updated to show the Equiano cable. He suggests that it's an interesting one because they're not a telecommunications operator in the true sense of the word. And telecommunications companies are heavily regulated in the African context. So he raised the question, how is Google going to be able to land here if it doesn't have the requisite telecommunications licenses?
Interesting. Good point. But I mean, it's you can totally understand why Google would be doing something. I mean, they just want to own their own pipeline. They want to own their own bandwidth, really. If all of their services around the world are connected via their own undersea cables, it's a huge benefit for them as a company, I'm sure, in terms of costs. I mean, obviously, the outlay for landing these cables are pretty high, but I mean, I'm sure they've got the money.
Oh, yeah, it's small change for Google.
It does also open up the question about who's going to own the internet. I mean, if they have, if we are running, basically all of our internet eventually runs through those cables, or at least the Google-based traffic, which is a lot of services, YouTube, you know, a lot of social media stuff, obviously all the searches, a lot of cached server information. Are you in focus there?
I went out of focus.
This is going to be a very interesting debate we're going to be having over a few years because, you know, I'm sure they would be in a position to also sub-sell or sublet if they want to some of that bandwidth capacity.
I'm sure they'll do that. I mean, they have to. I mean, it can't just be all Google on this thing.
But eventually, I mean, you can imagine, eventually, yes, you can justify, okay, let's invest in this now, get some customers to pay for it, and I mean, best case scenario, we own the cable and we sell the data. And on the other side, we have all the capacity we need for our future endeavors.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's exciting times. It's early days, but they've already commissioned a company to do the survey for them and to lay the cable system. So we're just over 2 years from an incredible amount of bandwidth coming down here. And then this Facebook, which isn't saying very much, but I saw the Wall Street Journal had something. In fact, I'd also heard about this a couple of months ago and spoke to Facebook about it, and they just didn't want to comment. They also didn't, by the way, comment to the Wall Street Journal. But they're working on a cable system called Simba. It's going to have Simba West and Simba East. And apparently it's named after the character in The Lion King. But they apparently are looking to work with telecommunications operators on this project. They don't want to do it themselves. And the talk is that Vodacom/Vodafone are possibly involved in this. I've attempted to get comment from Vodacom on this and hit a brick wall, which almost certainly suggests they are involved. But this one is going to encircle the African continent. So the West Link will follow the same route as WAX and Equiano, and the East Link will follow a similar route to the Seacom cable. And again, we don't know any details about the size of the system, but I would imagine that it's going to be a very high capacity system, far in excess of anything that's out there today. But interesting. I mean, two of the biggest internet companies in the world now appear to be in a race to encircle the African continent with high capacity fiber. As the African continent, should we be welcoming this, or should we be concerned about it?
Well, maybe a bit of both. I think we need to own our own infrastructure, right? And this is certainly not going to be that. Like so many things, we won't be owning any of this. It's a fantastic move for these companies. I mean, like certainly forward planning. And we do need to be a little bit concerned about the ownership. And I mean, if they own the entire infrastructure and we just connect to it, I mean, you know, where does regulation do? Where does it come in if there is such a thing ever needed? It's going to be interesting times to see how this plays out. I mean, the positive side, obviously, yes, more bandwidth, future redundancy gives us the opportunity to build newer technologies, better technologies. I mean, we're probably just a few years away from companies like Huawei and Apple doing the same, right? I mean, they own the devices, so why don't they want to own their own channels?
Yeah.
It's possible. And if you have, I guess it's also a good investment. I mean, you've got lots of money. What do you do with all that money? Invest in something that you know is going to be profitable. You know, this is certainly a profitable endeavor, data and undersea cables.
What I was really interested in about the Equiano cable is that they're only planning to launch it landed in three places: Cape Town, which is one end of the thing; Portugal, which is the other end of the thing; and in Nigeria. So every other African country is getting left out of the landing stations on this particular system, which I thought was really interesting. I mean, it's Google suggesting that South Africa and Nigeria are sufficient sources of generators of internet traffic to warrant the building of the system and leave out all the other countries in between.
But surely they'll have a kind of plan in that to land at other countries if and when is needed.
Maybe they can do that.
Playing their cards close to the chest. I don't want to let know what they're going to be doing.
Maybe it could be that.
Because I mean, we know that splicing a cable and getting it to land from wherever it is not the most difficult thing to do once the cable is there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. Martin says, wondering if cloud ecosystems are driving capacity. Amazon Availability Zone, Google Cloud Platform, and Amazon Azure, I think he means Microsoft Azure, needs big pipes. Do they need big pipes? I mean, they're actually building the data centers here. I think it could be argued that the pipes are more needed when data centers are accessed in Europe.
True, but I guess the backhaul of these things too. I mean, if you want to connect to data centers from South Africa to the UK or Portugal or wherever, or Spain or any of these countries, the US, I mean, again, if you own the touch points, you're still far better off with the technology because you own everything of it. You don't need to own necessarily the internal structure in the country.
Yeah.
Because you're going to be piping through virtually every bit of data if you eventually then own that pipeline.
Mm.
So you don't need to worry about the infrastructure in the country. You just take that leaves the country and you'll make more money, or probably make as much money. And you're not fighting with the internals of the country about who's owning what I think they're avoiding a lot of headaches by not competing with a country's infrastructure like that.
Yeah. It's interesting and quite exciting, I think. Assuming the Simba cable goes ahead, we know that Equiano almost certainly is going to go ahead now. Simba is still not as clear, but I wouldn't be surprised if they do go ahead with this project, especially after Elon Musk blew up Mark Zuckerberg's internet satellite. I think there's a good chance that he's redirected the money that he was going to be putting into the submarine cable. So I think it's exciting. All this extra bandwidth is good. But I think the regulators are going to be having a proper look at this. I think the other thing that's exciting is that this could potentially mean that data centers are going to follow from these companies. Facebook doesn't have a data center here, as far as I know. I don't think they have any infrastructure here. And Google has some data infrastructure in South Africa, but I think they're hosting, they've got some servers hosted in places like Internet Solutions data centers, although they'll never admit to that, where they're located. But they do have some infrastructure here, but they don't have a full-fledged cloud data center in South Africa. And I know they are looking for enterprise cloud business here. So maybe this is the precursor to announcements by Facebook and Google that they're going to be putting down data centers here.
I mean, we see the technology certainly going there. The way that these social platform or these platforms are growing,
you have to.
I mean, you have to own your own cake, you know, earn all the money that comes into your business. You don't want to be paying other companies for that stuff.
Yeah. But exciting times. I can't wait for all this bandwidth to arrive. It's just going to mean cheaper internet for all of us, hopefully.
Yeah, and hopefully lower pings too for certain game servers. I mean, if there's always that overspill of, you know, game server technologies being hosted or game service being hosted more
broadly. Yeah. So another interesting story that emerged just yesterday at this, or on Friday rather, at the Fourth Industrial, I forget what it was called exactly, but it was a Fourth Industrial Revolution conference that happened in, I hate that term, happened in Midrand this week, 4IR 4DI. Summit.
Oh, ID, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it's a meaningless term. I mean, but anyway, let's not talk about that. Let's talk about what the president said at this event, which was really interesting. He actually said something quite different in his actual speech compared to the prepared notes. But let me refer to the prepared notes because I wasn't there myself. But basically, he came out in strong defense of Huawei and said that the telecommunications operators in South Africa had written to him and spoken to him and asked for his intervention on this matter. And he basically very strongly sided with Huawei and with China and said, we need this company if we're going to be innovative and build 5G networks. Perhaps not surprising that he decided to do this, given that we're part of the BRICS alignment of Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. But it's an interesting time in world affairs with the US President Donald Trump engaged in a trade war with China and Huawei, according to Ramaphosa, being the innocent victim in all of this, which it probably is to some extent. But interesting to see the South African president coming out so vocally and so publicly in support of Huawei, which I thought was interesting. And I think probably the right thing to do.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, we also saw, I mean, even the US lifted a lot of the, a lot of the issues they had with Huawei. I mean, didn't a lot of that get raised now? Even Trump, Trump has lifted most of the ban now. Am I correct in saying that?
It's not clear. It's actually not clear. So it appears that American companies that were on this entity list by the from the U.S. Commerce Department are again allowed to sell technology components to Huawei, but there's still a lot of question marks over exactly what restrictions remain on Huawei.
Yeah, the battle continues, I guess. But I think Huawei is definitely going to come out top on this. I mean, it's too big a company to get impacted like this. And also their influence in so many, you know, businesses, especially 5G, which I'm still surprised about how they are. I mean, this is kind of their wild card, right? I mean, if it wasn't for 5G, I wonder how they would have survived this American, the US battle that they engage in at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, they are so big that, I mean, they're not like ZTE, which whose very existence was threatened when sanctions were imposed against that company. But the potential is if the Americans continued to play hardball, and there's a chance they may still continue to play hardball, that it's going to take a big chunk out of their profits and their revenue. And, you know, I think that their target to be the world's biggest smartphone manufacturer in the short term is possibly under threat as a result of this. I think Samsung is probably smiling to some extent. Because I think there's a lot of uncertainty amongst consumers now. Well, should we be buying, even after the this apparent truce. Should we really be buying a Huawei device? Do we really know that it's going to continue to support Google services, for example, going forward?
Yeah, I know a few people that's been wanting to upgrade, and they love the new phones, but they are very hesitant to kind of commit to it now because they don't know what's
going on. I'm sure, and that's the case, right? Absolutely, and I'm sure that's every consumer around the world is having the same thoughts in their heads, and that is obviously going to have an impact on their sales. Even if Trump says tomorrow, sorry, I made a mistake, Huawei, you're our friends again, buddies, peace, we love China. Even then, I think consumers will still be a little bit worried about what might happen next.
I really don't see Trump backing on this too much. I mean, yes, there might ease sanctions, but at the end of the day, this is probably a ploy to prevent Huawei from putting down infrastructure to that degree that 5G is going to require. Because once you have, I mean, if they do see China as a threat and they allow that in, and this, for whatever reason, becomes a real issue, and all this infrastructure is compromised.
Mm.
I mean, I'm not saying what he's doing is just, but I can totally see why they're playing this card. You know, they're just trying to prevent a company from, I guess, owning what could be the most important technology rollout, if it's going to be such a big tech in our lives and reality.
Mm, mm. Interesting times. I never thought the tech industry would be so influenced by global geopolitical events, but here we are in 2019. interesting comments from Ramaphosa, and I wonder if there's going to be some blowback from the US towards South Africa because of it.
Probably.
Possibly. Well, maybe we're just too small a fish in the global ocean for the US to care about.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you can also argue that. But, it wouldn't be the worst thing. We just need to be more innovative and really, be producing more ourselves regardless. You know, maybe it will spur us in the right direction. I hope so, but I don't think.
Right, so let me put a picture of Bill Gates on the screen. There's a name we haven't heard for a while. he did an interview about 2 weeks ago with, I forget who it was, somewhere in America. And he was asked by the interviewer, what do you regard as your biggest regret in working at or running Microsoft? And he said his biggest regret was losing to Google on mobile and Android emerging as the preeminent operating system, which Microsoft could have been. And that was his greatest regret. I thought it was very interesting.
Yeah, look, I mean, we've seen that battle. We've both spoken about this so often, and I fondly remember playing with that Windows mobile phone, thinking it had so much promise.
Mm.
Yeah, didn't come to any proper, didn't bear any reasonable fruits, I guess. And the better company won in that race. I also guess it was a hard, it's a hard pull to swallow, right? I mean, you're the biggest
software
brand.
Company. Yeah.
Owned the PC world and you couldn't transition to mobile.
Yeah.
I would love to know if that could be pinned back to like one or two decisions where somebody said, nah, let's focus on this rather. I'm sure there must be like a memo somewhere.
I was actually thinking, at what point did Microsoft lose mobile? I mean, in the early days, they were a leader in mobile, right? I mean, in those early, I don't know if I could call them smartphones, but they kind of were. They were like pocket computers. If you remember those little HP devices that were running Windows, was it Windows CE?
Yeah. Compaq iPacs were also part of that.
Compaq iPac. I mean, those were market-leading devices at the time.
The operating system was great, and then you had the promise of doing all these things, but we had a few issues. So the internet wasn't really there. You didn't have proper mobile data capability. So being able to do anything functional with it, apart from getting a few emails, office type apps.
Yeah. They did have Internet Explorer on those devices.
Yeah, sure. But your mobile data, I remember, you can only really go to Wi-Fi hotspots and use these things.
It was Edge. It was Edge at best. Edge.
So it's maybe too early for its time, and they didn't have enough industry support to develop the ecosystem like we now know is so critical to a mobile platform. You know, like your app stores and your apps for your platforms.
Yeah.
Or maybe the compatibility with just normal Windows. Maybe it should have been a full on compatibility with everything you can do on Windows. Maybe it would have been a scaled down version of that, but then it would have, we can speculate, but that would have been interesting to see.
By the end, Windows Phone was actually quite good software, but it was too late.
Interface, it's way too late. And the app developers didn't want to waste time and money in that platform.
Developing apps for it,
because the user base was unfortunately small. Apple dominated by then. Android kind of just came out of nowhere, and all of a sudden it was a true Apple competitor.
By
the time the HTC's became a big brand, you know, now all of a sudden, you know, you're looking at a Nokia with Windows and a really good Android-based alternative.
I think it was lost for Microsoft, actually. You make a good point. I think it was lost for Microsoft when HTC launched on Android.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was a big...
That changed the market.
Their phones were great.
They were here finally was an alternative to people who didn't want Apple. That worked and did what the iPhone did to a large extent.
And it was Google. I mean, that was a big drawing card for a lot of people. I mean, this was an exciting company to be a part of, you know, the Google phone, the Google ecosystem.
Yeah. Yeah. But don't cry too much for Mr. Gates or Microsoft, because they have gone on to be an extremely successful company. They are the most valuable company in the world. Their market capitalization is currently around $1.1 trillion. They're far ahead of Google and Amazon and Apple. And they've done this because they've pivoted. It's no longer so much about Windows and Office. It's now about cloud and everything around that. And of course, they've done extremely well with Microsoft Azure cloud centers. And Martin just points out in the chat room, he says Microsoft losing against the domination of Linux. Well, that's certainly true, because Android is built on top of Linux. He says also says there are now more Linux deployments on Microsoft's own Azure platform than Windows. That doesn't surprise me at all, because Linux is much cheaper to run, first of all, even on Microsoft's own platform. But Microsoft has embraced Linux. I mean, they've come so far from the days 10, 12 years ago when Steve Ballmer called Linux a cancer, or the GPL, the general public license that governs open source software, a cancer. And today, Microsoft loves Linux. I mean, they bought GitHub of all companies.
They admitted defeat, I think, in a not so admitting way, right?
Yeah.
You just have to work with these guys now. Let's just do it.
And they love it. I think Microsoft actually loves Linux now. They've built some sort of subsystem into Windows 10 now. In the latest version of Windows 10, you can run Linux on Windows 10. In fact, here Martin's just pointed out, new Windows subsystem for Linux version 2 is shipping with fully fledged Linux kernel. Watch this space. Next couple of years, Windows will be a flavor of Linux. Maybe. I don't know. Microsoft has invested so much in Windows, but maybe. I don't know.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. Eventually, nothing's going to be running natively on your machine, right? So everything will be running somewhere else. So you're not going to see what the underlying foundation is. It probably will be Linux, and you'll just be running a virtual machine version of the operating system, whether it's Windows or something else.
I'd still like to think that we'd still be doing stuff on our local computers. I'm not sure I want to go to a world where everything is delivered from the cloud.
Well, isn't that what 5G is kind of promising? I mean, you won't, if you have high density or high bandwidth, close quarter style antenna all around, I mean, you literally just need a dumb machine. I agree with you. I wouldn't want it, because you want stuff locally. But once everything is, I mean, you have so much already running on the cloud. I mean, if your internet goes down now, a lot of your smartphone is virtually useless, right?
Yeah.
So we're kind of halfway there.
Did you see, by the way, the weird stuff that Microsoft is posting up on its social media channels this week?
No.
On the Instagram page, and I think they might have done it on Facebook too.
With the Windows 1.
Windows 1.0, and then they had a picture of the old Windows 1.0 box with DOS and I think Microsoft, the first version of Microsoft Flight Simulator. And they deleted everything else off their Instagram account. And what are they doing?
That was, I believe, that is to do with the Stranger Things. It's a Stranger Things promo.
Oh, is that what it is?
All the retro. It's a bit weird. It's massively over the top, I think.
Yeah.
I read a story about that this morning.
Okay. So there's going to. I haven't watched season 3 of Stranger Things yet, but there must be something in there.
Yeah, I know, it's definitely to do with that.
Yeah.
It was a strange move to do, right? So
Stranger Things 3 is out on Netflix now, or is it still coming?
I don't know. I'm so far behind on that TV series.
Yeah. I started watching season 2 and gave up on it. I thought it was rubbish.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Season 1 was fantastic.
It was. It was incredible. I actually need to watch it again, because it's been a while. Yeah. Especially with the Lego set coming out now, I was quite interested to go back to the storyline and kind of remember all those things.
Yeah. No, it's a great series. Maybe I should just persevere through season two, but I watched the first episode and I was not impressed, so I ditched it.
Mm. Well, you can't judge it on just one episode.
I suppose. I suppose. There's so much else to watch out there that's so good that it's kind of, you know.
That's why I stopped watching a lot of shows because it is just too much. And, I've kind of just taken a while. Okay, hang on. Do I want to be committing 20 hours to something now?
Yeah.
I'm kind of weighing it up versus maybe game time or something else.
Yeah.
At least we know there'll always be good content to watch a few years down the line.
Oh, there we go. It is out, apparently. Martin says he's already watched the first four episodes of season three. So,
nice.
Any reference in there to Microsoft or to version one of Windows, Martin?
I'm sure there would have been something on one of the screens, Because, I mean, the nostalgia element they pulled on that was very good.
Yeah.
Working with Microsoft, this was a clever move.
Yeah. But maybe it isn't Stranger Things. Maybe they're planning to rename Windows.
What? Do Stranger Things.
It'd be a good name for Windows, right?
Let me see if I can find this.
Stranger Things version 1.0. But I've been wondering for a while, though, if Microsoft is going to rename Windows. You know, we've had Windows 10 now for how many years? It's been out for about 4 years.
It's been a while,
And, sure. I mean, there was talk that this is the final version of Windows, that we're never going to see a Windows 11. So maybe they rename it. Maybe they just call it Windows.
Oh, that'll make sense. I'm just putting up a Verge article. Microsoft is teasing Windows 1, from 1985, for a mystery Stranger Things tie-in.
Oh, there we go.
So it's a marketing strategy. So maybe they are launching something cool and they're just using this as a tie-in.
Maybe. I'd be surprised if it's only to do with Stranger Things. I mean, I'd imagine that that's something more if they're going to delete every message off their Instagram account and take this so public. I mean, what's in it for Microsoft in promoting a TV series?
Lots and lots of money and exposure, I guess.
Maybe, but I think there's something more to it.
Yeah, perhaps. We'll see, I guess. I mean, Stranger Things 3 is out now, so give it a month. What's it going to be the follow-up to this?
Yeah. Anyway, Martin says, chose to watch you guys tonight rather than Stranger Things 3.
Oh, we are certainly the Stranger Things tonight.
Yeah, maybe we should change the podcast name to Stranger Things. It'd be a great name for us, actually. Excuse me. Don't be surprised. I think there might be a Windows rename coming. Windows as a service, only $99 a year.
Now, see, now there's an idea I can totally see happening.
Mm.
And it works. It works so well for most platforms.
Yeah.
Adobe is a very good example of how that works.
Yes.
I don't know if I'd be happy with that, but if you're getting a better operating system and yearly updates, I mean, if the price is reasonable, it could work.
Yeah. I think they'd have to release a major update before they could do that, though. Something compelling to convince people that they need to go onto this, because there's going to have to be a clean break. And you know there's going to be a lot of angry people who won't want to upgrade.
Oh, yeah. What about all those old Windows 95 machines still running around?
Yeah, well, I'm sure those will keep running, keep getting infested with viruses. I can't believe there's still people running Windows XP. Or Windows, 95. I don't think there's any Windows 95 left.
I know somebody still runs Windows XP.
Yeah.
It's strange.
It's the operating system that refuses to die.
Yeah, that's crazy. Crazy times.
Right. The difficulty of doing this live stream through Wirecast and accessing everything through Google Drive for the show notes and then back to Wirecast is I have to go to the show notes, find out what we're talking about next, and then hit the button to send the picture live to. But I think we've actually covered this week's news. So let's move on to our features of the week. So let's start with our winner and loser of the week. So I'm going to send this dude over to the live stream. There we go. If you don't recognize him, his name is Johnny Ive. He is the suave British designer, creative type who designed things like the iMac and the iPhone. He's credited with Steve Jobs of really saving Apple and turning it around and coming up with some of the most iconic consumer electronics products that the world has ever seen. Mm. And he's leaving Apple talk. I think there was a piece in the Wall Street Journal said that he was frustrated and angry that Tim Cook is focusing more on the operational side of things and doesn't really care about the design of the products, which Steve Jobs obviously cared very deeply about. But Tim Cook then came out, I think, on CNBC and rubbished that report and said it was absolute garbage. The truth, as always, is probably somewhere in the middle. But he's done an incredible job. He did an incredible job, and some of the most recognizable designs of consumer electronics products in the world are accredited to that man. So at this point, I'm going to press this button.
Yeah.
Sir Jonathan, who has left Apple to start his own business, although Apple apparently is going to be paying him millions of dollars a year.
To hire his services back,
yes. So yeah, basically,
it's also financially more viable for somebody like him. I mean, if he can pick up one or two other clients, I'm sure they're earning money, but I mean, that's all about just building a legacy, I guess.
So he's basically a consultant now. No, not to play it down. He has done a brilliant job. Brilliant job there.
Definitely.
And our loser this week is Econet Media, for everything we've set out earlier in the podcast. So I won't elaborate too much there, but we'll be keeping an eye on Econet Media this coming week, and we'll be seeing if those Roku boxes come back online.
That's where you insert that. Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, yes, I'm supposed to insert that picture again. Right, there we go.
And the voice clip. The audio.
Of course, yes. Loser of the week is Econet Media. I love that. I don't think I'm ever going to get tired of that, Richard, even though this is the first time we're doing it.
Oh, no, people, keep dunking away from the sound effect board, please. It's going to be a terrible outcome.
And my reaction to that comment is...
Yeah, I'm at a serious disadvantage here. I need to do something about
it. You need to get something to send back to me.
I'll load an app on my phone and I'll play it back to you.
Yeah. Okay. Right. He clicks buttons to find out where we're supposed to be going next. Oh, this is getting so confusing. Here we go. Picks of the week. What you got this week, Rehart? Let me find the picture. Hang on. There we go.
Before I start talking about it.
Looks like a banana.
The best friend.
A bloody banana.
My friend Pedro. So this is a fantastic game that launched on Steam about a week or so ago. It's now on special on Steam for only 110 rands. But this is a platformer, all-out action, shooting, carnage. I mean, this thing is beautifully crazy, and it's just gory, and I love it. But I do want to read for you, just before I explain to you a little bit more about the game, just the game intro, because they summed it up so nicely. My friend Pedro is a violent ballet about friendship, imagination, and one man's struggle to obliterate anyone in his path at the behest of a sentient banana. The strategic use of split aiming, slow motion, and the old stylish window breach create one sensational action sequence after another, an explosive battle through a violent underworld. So that sums it up quite nicely. But the game is a lot of fun to play. It reminds me very much of a kind of a Deadpool character scenario, you know. It's very humoristic death that he when he kills people, it's very humoristic. And this game kind of aligns with that quite nicely. And in fact, I would be surprised. I'm surprised that we didn't see a licensed versions of this. Soundtrack is amazing. The fight sequences are really cool. And the ragdoll effects of the characters are fantastic. So when you're shooting people, and I mean, you can bounce your bullets off walls and pans, and you know, shoot things that explode that really have this catastrophic effect to everything around it. I mean, it's carnage, and it's a lot of fun. Well worth checking out.
Great, I'm definitely going to check it out. Sounds like it's got sort of quite. It's funny, but it's got a dark undertone to it.
Oh yes, yeah, it is very much. I mean, the banana element is pretty cool. There's a lot of humor in it, which is why I said, yeah, the Deadpool angle. You can totally see it in this game.
That
there is any association between the two, but a lot of fun.
It's not my pick this week, but you've actually just reminded me, in the Steam summer sale that's going on at the moment, I bought remake or the new latest version of the Leisure Suit Larry game.
Oh, yeah.
I can't actually say the name of it on this air since it's a family show, but it's got something to do with dreams.
The liquid kind.
We will not take it any further than that. But It's very good. It's lovingly done. Great graphics. A huge nod to the original Leisure Suit Larry, if you ever played that back in the 1980s. Complete with Lefty's The Bar. The storyline isn't the same, but they're throughout the game, they're parallels to the original and nods to the original. And it's done very well. The humor is a little the toilet at times, but I suppose that's what you expect from a Leisure Suit Larry game.
I think that's probably the only part of the game that probably would date a bit, is some of those some of those story elements.
Yeah. The lady's still up in the room above the bar, although Ken sent me is no longer the password. Don't want to copy too much, but it's kind of fun because Larry's come forward from the 1980s. I can't remember why he was in a. He went through a time machine or something. I didn't really watch the intro properly, but he now gets a cell phone, an iPhone, although it's called an iPrune in the game, and Larry trying to figure out the internet and this phone and how it works is probably the funniest part of the game. The question is like, what is an internet and where can I find it?
So what is the internet?
and then the lady upstairs above Lefty's. Sends Larry on a mission to fix the Wi-Fi router, he's got no idea what a Wi-Fi router is. So he asks Lefty behind the bar, "Where is this internet? Where can I find this internet?" Because he's got to repair the router. It's good fun. It's got good moments, and it's cheap. It's on special at the moment on Steam. I forget the exact price. It's $100 or something. Nice. And if you enjoyed the original Leisure Suit Larry, then you definitely want to get this one. But that's not my pick this week. I need to click buttons again. There we go. This isn't the best picture. I could have found a better picture of it. But have a look at that thing, Richard. That's what we are coming to you. And this, that thing is in part why we didn't have a show last week, although I blame Wirecast more than I do this. So this is a brand new product. It's been out a couple of months. It's called the Rode. What's it called? The Rode Procaster. Oh, there it is. No, it's the Rodecaster Pro.
Rodecaster Pro, yeah.
Not to be confused with the Procaster, which is the Rode Procaster, which is the microphone I'm using. And then this is the Rodecaster Pro, which is this beautiful mixing desk. And they've, as you can see in that picture, that's the whole thing. So if you see at the bottom right where the purple button is on the screen right now, and I'll press that. I just literally press that on the on the board. So you can program those, so you can add your own audio into them. It has a USB C interface at the back. You can plug in four XLR mics. When you're around a table and you want to do a podcast, for example. It's got four independent controls, USB. You can then, the thing that sold me on this product was the Bluetooth functionality, which will allow you to connect a mobile device like a smartphone and do a phone call. So if I wanted to do a podcast and I needed to call somebody, now I could have done that in the past through Skype, a bit of a pain. And the quality wasn't always the best. I can make a regular GSM phone call from my phone and have it routed through this board. Record it straight in. So we could be sitting here right now and we could decide we want to phone up Elon Musk on his mobile because we've got it here and bring him into the show. I could literally just press up the Bluetooth button, pick up my device, dial Elon Musk, and he'd answer the phone. "Hey, this is Elon." And he'd be on the show.
I think let's prank call him right now, Duncan.
Maybe there's someone we can prank call though. Who can we call?
Well, the question is, what's the prank going to be?
I think we need to think about this.
Let's plan this for next week.
Maybe we should.
Unsuspecting victim.
Yeah. Maybe we should call Toby Shapshak.
Well, that could be interesting.
Or Aki Anastasio.
Well, don't give out everybody's names now. They're going to be...
they're going to know. That's a good point. Too late. It's already gone out live. Martin says, "Rode, not far away from where I live, made here in Oz." Made in Oz, really? I thought it was an American product. Could have sworn Rode was an American product.
No, definitely Australian, eh?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Otherwise, I wouldn't have bought the bloody thing. kidding.
But it's totally one of the best audio companies.
No, Rode is fantastic. Yeah, no, their products are, you just won't go wrong with them. You really won't go wrong with them. Really impressed with this microphone as well. I forget what the setting is called, but If someone talks in the next room, for example, it's not going to come through here at all. It's a, what do they call it? It's not a cutter or a it could be a de-esser. No, I forget what the technical term is. But
low cut filter,
something like that. So it's going to pick up my voice. The moment I stop talking, all ambient sound is cut out.
Mm. Oh, I see. That's cool.
So you know, if someone starts up a vacuum cleaner down the corridor, for example, it's simply not going to come through.
Nice. That's a pretty cool feature.
I think you might hear it when I'm talking, if I'm talking, because it then activates the microphone. But
sure.
So this Rodecaster is fantastic. So it takes a little micro USB as well. So this show is currently, the audio vision of the show is currently being recorded to the Rode. So I'll be using that to cut the audio vision of the podcast this week. But just generally speaking, fantastic product. And I had the Yamaha before, which I'm now looking to sell. The Yamaha, what is it, the 10MG MXU or something along those lines, which had so many buttons on it, I never knew what I was doing. This thing has been simplified and is designed for podcasters, which I really love about it. And I can't fault it. I absolutely can't fault it. I'd give this product 10 out of 10.
Where's the inch of the cheering? Inch of the cheering guys there.
There you go. Mustn't forget those, yeah. I'm gonna have
you
to find
time it. You should time it so that you may say giving us 10 out of 10, and then they just the audience erupts. Timing is everything, Duncan.
Yeah. I suppose it becomes second nature after a while, just pressing buttons. I'll just have my eyes closed and I'll just off we go, like playing a piano.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's all new to me right now, and all this flickering between stuff. And I still need to use the Stream Deck. It's still sitting here and I haven't programmed it yet. But it is still telling me the Bitcoin price, which is currently $11,445.
The most expensive Bitcoin tracker in history, that.
Indeed. And I think that's our show, apart from our quiz results. So let me get rid of the Rodecaster on the screen since it is no longer relevant. And let's do our quiz results. Let me do the first question. Google plans to build a new subsea cable from Europe to South Africa, while Facebook plans to encircle the continent with a similar system. What are the two systems called? And Google's is Equiano and Facebook's is said to be called Simba.
The second question. Which social media company said last week that it might slap warning labels on posts from politicians? And the answer there is Twitter.
And NASA has announced plans to send spacecraft to which moon in the solar system? And that is Saturn's Titan.
And very interesting, the fourth question. Apple has announced it's moving production from the Mac Pro from where to where? And the answer is from US to China.
Yes, interesting move.
We're going to have Huawei issues, right?
Who announced last week he is leaving Apple? And that, of course, is Sir Jonathan Ive, better known as Johnny. Johnny Ive. Johnny. What is that movie? That was Jack Nicholson. I'm remembering that incorrectly. The one where he was the madman in Colorado in that hotel.
No, I don't know it.
No, you don't know that movie. The Shining.
Oh, The Shining.
Shining.
Oh, Jack Nicholson.
Here's Johnny. I think it was from that movie.
That is from that movie.
Yeah, right. It's one of my favorite lines ever in a movie. Here's Johnny.
But I mean, thinking of Jack Nicholson's face now, I mean, that actor has gone through so many characters and iterations. I mean, young Jack Nicholson, old Jack Nicholson. I mean, those are two completely different things there.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, guys, thanks for joining us on the live stream today. If you're listening after the effect, is that the right word? No. After the show. It's definitely time to end this podcast. I'm losing my mind.
after the effect, I think.
After the effect, yes. We'd love to hear from you as well. Our WhatsApp line to use is 071-999-1111. But please do try to join us on Sundays. We're a little bit late today, just as we were ironing out the final issues we had.
His fault.
What, him? You know, it was definitely my fault.
We should have a little animation if I put my hand up there.
I need these animated stuff on the left hand. Oops, that way it's in reverse. I need animated stuff on the side of the screen here, pointing big arrows, you know.
Oh, this is going to be all out for when I get my green screen.
Absolutely. You must get one because we're going to have a huge fun if we do that. But yeah, as you can hear, we have great fun with the video version of this podcast. So do join us, either watch it in after the fact. I know a lot of you are having Sunday lunch at around 1 o'clock, but if you're free, do join us on our live stream at 1 p.m. on Sundays, and just join us on YouTube. Our YouTube channel is simply youtube.com/TechCentral. Couldn't be easier. And hit that subscribe button. Otherwise, if you don't subscribe to the audio version of the podcast, you can, of course, listen to that in your car, in your favorite podcast app. Just search Tech Central, one word, in whichever your favorite podcatcher is, and you'll find all of our podcasts there, including this one, Talk Central. And we go out on Sunday afternoons. From Richard and myself, until next Sunday, and hopefully there won't be too many bugs in the system between then and now. Have a great week, and we'll chat to you then. Cheers.
Ciao, ciao.